It's the last day of National Poetry Month, so after today, we can read from the Vladivostok phone directory. And good evening, everybody. With that little introduction, we're now back in California, and it's 7 o'clock, and it's Wednesday night, and it's the 30th of April, 2014. How did we get here? Same way we got everywhere else.
I see. What class? This is the 15th
entropy,
class?
Entropy. Yeah.
Dan, is this our 15th class? It's the class number 15, everybody. And what are we doing? This is the 15th class of the American Book of the Dead studies by E.J. Gold. And our work is to apply our attention in such a way that we begin to unravel some of the offerings that this material has given us. We have been on a voyage for many, many, many years, and the last few weeks we've been studying this particular one, which in a certain way I believe is a capstone to the work we've been doing. Is Pathworld on? Pathworld.
Yes.
Many years ago, I was at gunpoint pretty much. Pathworld forced me to start a class on the HBM. I think it was four or five years ago. And I was held hostage in Riverside, California, till I said yes. And we worked our way through that book.
Is that in Cosmos Street by any chance?
No.
When you started out? No, okay.
No. We were on this Justin TV here. And then we worked our way through the practical work on self. No, I don't know. Did we do practical work on self?
You know, I think I missed that cycle.
Yes.
And then we did. Did we do HBM again? Do you remember, George?
You did HBM again.
We did. Yes, we did.
Okay, and it was worth. It's important to do. So HBM is the human biological machine as a transformational apparatus, also by E.J. Gold. And the concept is that we're doing these various books. Then we did Life in the Labyrinth. We did the Joy of Sacrifice. And then we did the Hidden Work. Each one of these things takes about a year. And in a certain way, here's the whole thing. Okay, HBM, the human biological machine, which in a certain way is like the beginning of a particular series, the author is guiding us and he's saying, okay, here's some things about the human biological machine that you might want to know about. And one of the things that's startling, actually, is that we are composed of two electrical bodies. And George, you're going to help me out here, okay?
Right.
I get lost in my musings. And the two electrical bodies are the transformational device called the HBM, the human biological machine. And it's friend, the essential self, which is two separate electrical bodies. Now, this is very important. You might ask yourself, why is he talking about this tonight? This is about the ABD. Well, we're going to get to that in a minute. So we begin to understand that that's the concept. And then we put in effort to remember ourselves, to pay attention, to awaken the attention of the essential self, and gradually it begins to grow, and this dynamism starts to occur between these two. In the waking state, then the machine can operate as a transformational apparatus. And the essential self starts to form, in a sense, its own standing. All right? And if we look at practical work on self, and I believe it is, I can't remember the chapter number right now, but it's the chapter called Looking for Mr. Livingstone, Dr. Livingstone. And in that one, this is another, what I call a parallel book that E.J. wrote, that is a pragmatic unfolding of what's in HBM. And every morning at 6 o'clock, I have to get up and I go to this class, but it's once I get in the water, I don't want to get out. But anyway, and we're studying that. In there, he's trying to develop a way to for you to distinctly discern between the HPM and the existence of the essential self. And for the next phase of the work that we're going to be doing in the ABD, it's critical to begin to understand that. Now, the problem with a lot of the spiritual literature out there, and I don't shortchange it at all, things are not black and white. There's a gradualism to spiritual growth. And we gradually develop the positioning of the essential self as it begins to grow. It's not like it's off, and then you're enlightened. It doesn't work that way. There's a gradualism, and it starts to become more and more and more of a factor. Is Susan on tonight?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, and here's an individual that's, with great effort, is starting to understand that's where she is, that's who she is. She's an essential self housed in this human biological machine, and it has standing. We don't have a lawyer on, do we? No lawyers. Mm. But there's a concept in...
That's a good start.
There's a concept in law called, do you have standing? Are you able to proceed with a legal action? But you have to have standing. And so what we need to do as workers now is to acknowledge the existence of our essential self, however slight that candle flame is, okay? You acknowledge it, and you do it by awakening it. And how do you awaken it again? Is that we apply the attention of the essential self. We activate it, and then something occurs. Who? Yeah. Huh? She's a lawyer? Oh, well, if she's a lawyer, she could discuss the concept of, do you have standing? You know, can you proceed with a legal action? And so the point is to begin discerning the two electrical bodies. Nowhere have I seen, and correct me if I'm wrong, and Harry, you and or George might be able to, I've never seen anybody discuss the concept that we are two separate electrical bodies. Am I correct in that, or have you seen that?
I agree. I've not seen it anywhere else.
Tamara has a thought on this.
Doc Freejohn.
Oh, really? Oh, Doc Freejohn.
He uses different terminology.
Okay.
So it may be a question of just whether different formulations are talking about the same thing. I think that what David is saying is this is a very contemporary version of this, you know, a very contemporary formulation of this.
Yes.
And also very...
How are you doing over there, Mark?
Distinctive, like, you know, it introduces a kind of sharpness to what you're talking about, you know, rather than like poetic formulations.
You know,
okay,
and
so go ahead, George.
I was just going to say, again, over the years, I've kind of tried to use a slightly different terminology, which is we have the recognizable materiality of our physical body, and we're cognizant of its existence over the course of our lifetime. What EJ's suggesting is that this materiality might actually be animated by a life force, by the life force of the Creator, the Absolute. And he calls that life force within ourselves the Voyager. And so what we're attempting in our transformational efforts is to see if we can separate the experience of the life force within ourself, which I experience as a vibratory sensation, which
distinct vibratory sensation.
Right, right. Yes, exactly right. And Gurdjieff, of course, says, you know, of course, initially it's impossible for us to recognize this, but if we deceive ourselves and imagine that it is present, we gradually actually begin to experience it, and then we're able to separate our essential self, this animating life force, from the materiality of the physical body, and rather than going through life in an unconscious state for the essential self identified with the human biological machine, it actually begins to develop its own perspective, and that's what reading the American Book of the Dead is able to help us cognize.
And in the Silverdale has preempted what I want to say is now we're going to work with a terminology called the Voyager. And what I guess I'm trying to say is that to determine, to see, to place in concrete in the way you perceive yourself as you go through the day, as you go through your life, as the Voyager. You can conceive of yourself as a person, and you know, there you are, you're just a person in life, and here you go and doing stuff, right? But you're a Voyager, essentially. And we're actually talking about the incredibly bold statement of saying we're going to change the fundamental stance upon which we exist, and we're going to move ourselves from being, in a sense, just people to recognizing our divine existence as a Voyager. That's the purpose why, you know, we did the exercise in the first five readings of reading to somebody, but then for me the heart of gold there was to be read to and allow yourself to be penetrated. And if you're read to, think of the person lying, let's just say you're reading to somebody and they're lying there, and you begin the reading, you start reading to them, and you can tell when they kind of click in, right? You kind of click in, you can just see suddenly their attention becomes alive, and they're in the channel of what you're about to say, and you're reading to that person. And you can see that, you can visualize it. Oh yeah, I've been a reader and I've done that before. But now, what I'm interested in is flipping that table. And what is it like exactly when you're being read to? Now the reason I use words like that, and I know that it's not possible to be exact in a certain way, but it is, George will tell us that it is exact. He has a clear and distinct understanding of a particular vibratory force when he is in the stance of the Voyager. But when we're in the position of being as the Voyager, at that point, something happens. It helps us establish ourselves as the Voyager. Okay? Now, so I wanted to take a little bit of time to just ask if other people had a chance to do the readings back and forth during this week. Did you, Tamara?
Mark read to me.
Is that microphone on? That third one?
No.
Yeah.
Third.
Yeah,
it is?
It is?
Yeah.
Is there a chair there? No, there's no chair. Tell us what happened. Can they hear her? Or give her the phone.
No,
give
very
her the phone.
Much like what would be happening.
Here, it's okay, Marva.
Mark began the reading, and I just felt this wave of compassion wash over me. And at one point during the reading, there was the sound of sirens, and I thought, oh, I really feel the Bardos. So it was, but that experience of sort of the blessing of compassion really
But you felt like a wave. Did you,
wave of compassion.
Wave of compassion. Did you feel yourself moving into the space of the Voyager? Could you feel a transition take place?
Yes, and when, like I said, and then all of a sudden the sirens. You could hear these sirens, and I thought, oh God, I'm really in the, I'm really here in the Bardos, and he's reading. So
it's the Voyager that this is, in a sense, this book is it's a brilliant volume. I mean, it's a volume written, you know, 1,200 years ago or something like that. But it's written for the practitioner to read to somebody. But our experiment here in this little class is we are being read to. We are the Voyager. What is it like to be the Voyager when you're read and you're reading these things? And somebody said something in one of the, in last week's log, you know, and they were moved by the reading number 5. Do you have that there, Ivan? Go to reading number 5.
Yeah, actually, I share that outlook. I've always
Go ahead and read
about this one.
Go ahead and read. No, he's okay. Go ahead and read number 5. This
reading
is
number
reading
five.
Number 5. Okay, go ahead.
I place my concentrated attention on the guide of the labyrinth, who is the reflection of the moon upon the water, apparent and yet non-existent in itself, visualizing the guide as the clear light, the reflection of my own spiritual nature.
Say that again.
Reading number 5. I place my concentrated attention on the guide of the labyrinth, who is the reflection of the moon upon the water, apparent and yet non-existent in itself, visualizing the guide as the clear light, the reflection of my own spiritual nature.
Okay, so let's unwrap that a little bit, okay? So some guy's reading this to somebody, right? Now, the person reading it is reading these words. What is the first thing? I place my attention?
Concentrated attention.
So now the person, is this saying that the person that is reading that is placing their concentrated attention? I don't get it. Harry, you there?
It's the Voyager. It's directing the Voyager to place their concentrated attention.
So Susan is saying, he's the reader is saying, is directing the Voyager.
Well, it's also directing my own attention, isn't it? I mean, I, as the Voyager, place my concentrated attention.
Bingo.
So
it's an instruction.
We're both a Voyager, aren't we? I mean,
well, the delicate position of the guide in this case, or the reader, the job is to read and deliver the instruction.
Mm-hmm.
But
they're read in first person, so they've shifted their referential index into the person being read to.
It's an interesting thing. That's right, because you're not, you think of the conversation if it was different. Okay, you should place your attention now, your concentrated attention.
Well, interestingly enough, I think there was an addition or two of the readings where EJ had formulated it that way. You know, place your concentrated attention on and so on. And then he said at some point, well, this is not correct. We're going to do all of this in the first person because the reader is joining with the Voyager, or is become, you know, is emulating the Voyager. I don't remember the exact language. Maybe somebody else said.
Let's pretend for a second.
Well, I recall I did a reading in Second Life with Magic Phoenix.
With Magic Phoenix?
And about the third reading, I really felt as if it was me talking to myself,
So Susan's saying, on the third reading, she says, I felt like it was me talking to myself.
So it would be natural to say, I placed my concentrated intention. Because as you the way that you hear it is that that's what you're doing.
Okay. It's brilliant in a sense because it's an instruction. Now let's pretend for a second that you are a voyager. Okay? Pretend for a second that you are the voyager. Oh my gosh, I don't really have a body at this moment. You know, I don't know what happened exactly, but no body. And you're somewhere, but you are definitely voyaging in the bardos. And you start to hear something and it says, I place my concentrated attention on the guide of the labyrinth. I place my concentrated attention on the guide of the labyrinth. That's an instruction. So as a voyager, you go, ah, got it. What is the void? What is the guide of love? Who is the reflection of the moon upon the water? So suddenly, you're able to stand in a position where the guide, who is the reflection, apparent and yet not existent in itself, then visualizing the guide as the clear light. So here you are. Let's say it was a different construction. You're totally lost in the middle of the foothills somewhere. There's no markers. There's no signs. There's no street. You don't have a map. And suddenly, the little teeny parachute comes down, and it has a little recording, and it says something like, watch for the red hill on the east, just below the cliff. What are you going to do? You're going to go, oh, I am now oriented. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You start to know how to orient. Are there comments, Susan or Harry?
Oh, there's some other conversations taking place on sidebars, I would call them.
Okay.
But
you decide whether
nothing,
we...
Nothing at this point.
Okay, so we're giving an instruction, and we're reading, and we're receiving an instruction. And what was it that was said again?
I place my concentrated attention on the guide of the labyrinth.
What did Susan say on the third reading? What happened? Do you remember what you said?
Well, I said on the third reading, I became the voyager, and I really felt bodiless.
Mm-hmm.
It was like I was just kind of calmly there with my eyes shut, hearing the instructions, and it was calming.
And there's a clarity.
I've done readings with Harry as well, and there's this very calming sense of, I've got something to hold on to here.
I've got something to hold on to here. And that's the kernel. And when we say, I've got something to hold on to, who's the I that we're talking to here?
The ever-present being.
The ever-present being, this is the realm of the voyager. We are now walking into the realm of the voyager. When we turn this page, we're going to be in full-blown Disneyland, okay? At, you know, what is it, the e-ticket? We're going to need a book of e-tickets.
Okay.
And so I wanted to drive home again the concept, and if anybody else that didn't have a chance to share last week that had now read, I'd be interested to hear what you have to say. Did you connect up with Vidir, George?
Yes, we had a wonderful reading back and forth. My experience as Vidir read to me was I was able to enter into a state of complete relaxation. So I had my eyes closed, my posture was erect in my chair, and I just listened to the words, and in that increasing intensity of relaxation, it in a sense activated my Voyager so that I was able to experience more or less what it says here in reading number 5, an experience that guided labyrinth, the reflection of the light of the Voyager in a sea of light and infinite extension. It was really remarkable. And then, of course, I read to Vidir, and Vidir said two things that stood out for me. One is she was imagining that it was actually her last moment of life, and that this was the first instructions she was getting in the aftermath of her last breath. And whether that were to happen tomorrow or in 30 years, 40 years, whenever, that this was actually happening, and that it was as though her body had become transparent in simply listening to the reading. So it was a very powerful reading for both of us.
Yeah, so her body became transparent, and let's go back to... Reading number 2. Now I am entering transition. And don't forget, the reader is reading this, the Voyager is receiving, and must separate myself from all ordinary material accumulations and accomplishments in my human primate sojourn. I prepare now to release from my human primate friends, family, and surroundings. I can't take them with me into the clear light. So when I was reading that, I thought, my goodness, that's the gift that you can give to your friends and family. Why would I say that?
The gift?
Yeah. It's because if we, as experienced Voyagers, begin to put on the mantle of being the Voyager, and we release the primate connections, it helps them too. Mm-hmm. Then they're not obligated to be stuck with us in a certain way. There's a freedom that we can give to each other in that manner.
As far as letting them know that it's okay that you're leaving?
Well, not only letting them know, this is not from a linear point of view of letting them know, but they might be able to sense it in their essential self, because your essential self is starting to emerge. Because at this point, we're still in the transit. We are in the death mode. The body is dying during a period of time. In traditional medicine, dying is meant flatline, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they said you flatline, but there's no brain activity. Well, unfortunately for the scientists, there's also a lot of material being gathered, and it's been around for 100 years now, of so-called near-death experiences, and they're plentiful. You know, where people died and then came back, and they have certain stories. But we're in the transit, and we're starting to transit. So this whole point is the idea of we're transiting. And over the years, I've tried to point us to the idea that there's the importance of the sensation of transition. And then you're in another chamber, potentially, but it's the sensation of transition. And you go, oh, now I am transiting, says here, and now I'm entering transition and must separate myself. Got it. Oh. Okay? So these, go ahead, Ivan.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm interested in what you're saying about the others, let's say, who may be in a hospital room or in your room at home or whatever with you when you're dying. I mean, it seems likely that you could be changing your vibration. You know, if it's your vibrational state, you know, if it's the Voyager or the essential self. So, I mean, you could be giving off radiation or having a vibration that would be somewhat contagious. In the moment, I mean, for other people, I mean, because there are a lot of stories about a deathbed phenomena also, which relate to that.
So,
in other words, you could be directly irradiating people in that moment.
That,
yeah.
You can. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to thank Ivan for that insight.
Very good. At this point, where we are, then, is that the Voyager has gone through the symptoms, and the physical body has, in a certain way, has finished dying. Okay? Now, the Tibetans and a lot of these guys say, okay, yeah, you let it sit there for about 3 days, 72 hours or something like that, and then whatever. Right? That's this process. That's the process I'm talking about right now, these 72 hours. As you're dying, and you have died, and the uncoupling settles in. For the uncoupling is so momentous that for most voyagers, they can't hang out there. It's too brutal. The transit is just too intense.
Mm-hmm.
And you're popped out of it. You really, what happens is you tend to go into unconsciousness. The Voyager becomes overwhelmed, in a sense, with the power of their transition, unless you start to train yourself.
Practice.
That's what we're doing here. We're saying, there's a good probability that I'm going to die. Well, I don't know about me, but I do know about you guys. I mean, there's 7 billion of you have died so far, and that might continue to happen. So, practice. Me, on the other hand,
well,
keep quiet, Ivan. So, the next few chapters that we get into, so-called the second stage of the voyage and so on and so forth, begins to uncover a number of things. But I want to turn our attention now to the last part of this chapter portion, this first stage, and what's been written there. Right after reading number 5, the author goes on, by so confronting the real nature of the guide, even a voyager who would not be expected to recognize the labyrinth without help is almost certain to recognize it. A voyager who, while voyaging in the human primate dimension, has been brought face to face with a clear light, may be able to recognize the macro-dimensional domains in the labyrinth just in this way. What is he saying there, Ivan?
Well, let's throw this question open for the group.
Yeah, that's
please.
A good way to put it off on others.
Well, one of the things that he's saying is that a version of what you were saying, which is that this moment is so crucial, it's so impactful, it's so full of possibilities, potent, that the remarkable, unexpected outcomes could happen, you know, for a lot of people, for various, for
a voyager,
for people who are not trained, even if they're not very trained, let's say.
But now he's taking it to the next level. Right. He's saying a voyager who, while voyaging in the human primate dimension, that's us.
Mm-hmm.
That's me, right? That's us right
yeah.
here.
Right.
Had been brought face to face with a clear light, may be able to recognize. So once again, he's saying, stand in the place of the voyager. Recognize the clear light when it peeps out at you. Because that might help you. Go ahead, Susan.
Well, I mean, I think there's a strong thing about accepting and giving the help.
So that accepting and giving the help?
You're giving help.
The guiding?
Exactly. So a voyager who would not be expected to recognize the labyrinth without help is almost certain to recognize it.
Well, yeah, so the help that we can give ourselves is to do what we've been doing, hopefully in the last 2 weeks, is reading to each other and being read to, and to notate the fact that what does it feel like to be in the macro dimensions and understand that this is actually being called being brought face to face with the clear light in the macro dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because then he goes on to say, but a voyager who knows only the theory of the method and has not experienced the continual exposure to the macro-dimensional radiation, this is going to be an important word, and navigation may become bewildered and confused during the actual experience. Untrained voyagers who have been during their passage through primate life so involved with primate conditioning, they may be unable to accept help. There you go, Susan. And in the end, take a downward spiral. Even the voyager who is highly skilled in the macro dimensions may become, because of violence of the passage, note well, become momentarily disoriented, thrown off balance, so much so that the second stage illusions, which is coming up, may become overwhelming. There are those who, although already familiar with the teachings, have passed into degraded forms of daily existence, broken vows, failed to perform their essential obligations honestly, or become violent, obsessive, filled with passion. To them, once again, this instruction is indispensable. And then here's what I really wanted to emphasize for tonight, this next two paragraphs. While in the second stage of this section of the labyrinth, one has formed what is called the radiant body of illusion, also called the body of habits, not realizing that the biological machine is dead. Interesting. A state of clarity comes over the voyager. The instructions should be applicable in the states where objective and subjective reality meet face to face. The karmic pictures of the unwinding process have not yet begun. A voyager is, for the moment, in the center of the cyclone, or more properly, the eye of the hurricane, as the sun's rays dispel the darkness. And now, here we go. And the clear light and other macro-dimensional radiations disperse the power of karma. So the ideas here, we are a voyager, and we're going to be subject to our body of habits. What are the four lines again? Something about
all phenomena.
All
illusion. Neither attracted nor repelled. Not making any sudden moves. My habits will carry me through.
So what are these habits? In some of the old Tibetan texts, these guys say, don't worry about your past lives. Just observe yourself right now and you got it. don't worry about your future, because whatever's in your mind right now, that's what that's going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
So you're creating your body of habits and your voyaging habit body today. Right now, what you're doing right at this moment is adding to the body of habits. There is a resilience during the voyage between death and rebirth. There's a resilience where the karmic evolutionary force called the body of habits is more permeable. And you can do something about it.
You're talking about a span, like that there's a golden moment or something.
Well,
it's like an opportunity.
Let's call it like 49 days here that we're about to walk into, because the guy just died.
Well,
right?
I thought this is talking about here in this pre-stage, you know, in the very early stage, the confronting the clear light stage, right?
Yeah, this is the movie trailer for these last couple of
right.
paragraphs here.
Right. Okay.
This is the trailer for the movie that's about to start.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like we are our body of habits. And that body of habits, our karmic wind, is manifesting right now. It's manifesting right now. And then you know what else is happening? I'm enhancing my body of habits going forward. So what body of habit do I, and where do I want to place my coins? How do I want to invest? Make sense?
Mm-hmm. David,
there
there's an interesting question.
Go ahead. Go ahead and read it.
It's from Clear Light 108. Where is located the body of habits? In the heart?
Clear Light 108.
That's pretty advanced, Harry.
Yeah, well, Clear Light 108, I don't know where she's, or he, it, is at, but they're asking where is located it. Don't forget, let's go back to the beginning of the class here. We talked about that we are an electrical body, and the electrical body carries, we need to read through human biological machine again, that the electrical body carries karmic signatures with it. So it's in the electrical body that it exists and therefore manifests. But we get to cheat because we got the script, okay? We have the script, and since we know what the script is going to say, we can prepare for the role when we get to that karmic moment that is important to us, whether it's which we'll see in the next few weeks what those are. But
Dave, I'll tell you, I'll also remind you, and Ivan, you might be able to recall this as well, but in 1974, the same year that the ABD was originally published, EJ published the book called Sacrifices, which subsequently became the book called The Joy of Sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, of course, are listed 18 sacrifices. And the sacrifice of these are habits of our historical personality, desires, habits, ordinary life, tendencies, control, relationships. And so what we're trying to do is have the Voyager cognize these habits of the body as unproductive to its growth and development. And so we try to substitute a habit of the Voyager in place of what is a habit of the body, you know, if that all makes sense. So we kind of create we intentionally set out to create a body of habits for our Voyager by substituting the bad habits of our historical personality. So,
yeah, so
I don't know if I explained that very well, but something like that.
Yeah, I hope somebody transcribes that and puts it into the log. That
yeah,
is perfect.
It's good. But going back to Harry's question, then, you know, the Okay, so we have a body of habits, whether we've deliberately done anything about it or not, right?
That's
so
right.
We could have a body of unconscious primate or bad habits or whatever, which
right.
persists after the material body is gone. Or I can have this more trained or deliberate, let's say, body of habits where I've worked on what those habits are, doing some substitutions,
yeah, let's
making
get,
some
let's,
changes.
Let's get away from the idea of bad habits.
Okay.
Okay, because that, I don't want to invoke the whole thing of, you know, the Judeo-Christian sins and all that stuff.
Right.
They're just, they're unconscious.
Unconscious
habits.
Is what I was thinking of.
They're unconscious
Why
habits.
Not habit of attention.
Habit of attention? Say it again, Susan.
Yes, why not the habit of attention?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can develop, so we have unconscious habits, and we can watch them unfold as we observe ourselves and go, oh, wow, look how that guy is. That's you. And that, and the, it's like the reflection of that electrical body, and the human biological machine is powerful. There's a lot of power in it.
Well, and David, if I could just illustrate this, I would encourage everybody to read the Book of Sacrifices because there's a much fuller explanation of all of this there. But just by way of example, and this is certainly not one of the habits referred to in Book of Sacrifices, but if we have the habit of smoking, let's say, this is kind of an addiction which we indulge in, engage in, because we don't have the willpower to stop or because we enjoy it or because it's a part of our routine. It's a habit, and we do it routinely by virtue of the fact that there's no compelling reason not to. Well, as we begin the development of the Voyager says to itself something like, well, boy, if I change the habit of smoking to the habit of non-smoking, it would give to me, the Voyager, a sense of will that I did not have before. Of course, this would require the historical personality to accede to that request. But anyway, it's really replacing one habit with another habit, the habit of the historical personality, which is generally detrimental to the Voyager, with a habit that is beneficial to the Voyager and our permanent sense of stability and identity as a Voyager.
We don't need to really understand where the habits of the historical personality came from. We can get into that, but the bottom line of it is we got them, all right? That's what we have. That's what we bring to the table with. Now the work is, you go, you know, is that a good Voyager habit? Now that I have a chance to think about and think through this a little bit, is that a good Voyager habit that I want to have? Let's say you have the habit of non-communication. Stuff goes on in you, and you get you get angry at somebody, but you don't say anything. You know, they're doing a little something, and you don't talk about it. You just don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're, well, it's kind of worked for me a lot. You know, it kind of works okay.
I isolate myself. I don't want to talk to anybody.
I don't want to talk to anybody.
I don't want to tell anybody I'm angry at them.
Look, what a mess if you start to talk to somebody. So I'm just not going to do that. So the next time you do it again, people are agreeing with me here.
Or at least the dogs are.
Oh. Okay. When you do it again, when you do that habit again, the way I see it, you're putting a penny into that bank.
Mm-hmm.
You're investing in that habit pattern. In freedom, we look at another habit pattern, and you may develop the habit pattern of communicating with your fellow Voyagers. And now you've begun to replace something. Okay? Yes, please. Oh, give him the phone.
Yeah, just hit the on button.
Maybe, Janet. Maybe. Okay.
Well, since I've been doing this, attending David's shows and the ICWs and quads, sometimes the space is very powerful, and I find myself nodding off. The body just has to go to sleep sometimes. And as you know, gradually over the past couple of years, I find that I'm more and more able to stay awake in the space. And to me, that is training a Voyager habit. Even though it's the body that's being affected, it's the body's tendency to fall asleep is what I'm working against. And if that tendency wasn't there, I would have nothing to work on. So,
in this context,
right. So the what seems to be a negative habit is actually the means of development.
Right. That's what's called in the biological machine.
Turn it off.
There's a passage where this is called the mutual reciprocal initiation, I believe.
And you weren't there this morning, but we were reading. But I remember the phrase of that, and then eventually you discern. It was chief weakness. It was then you begin to discern how to turn it into an ally for your work, and that's what you did, right? But you observed it, you saw it, and then you started working with it. This is precisely the thing that we have to work with. Particularly when the as he puts it, this word did you use? The space gets powerful. He said something. Space gets powerful, and then he goes to sleep. I threw my shoe at him once, and that helped a little bit. But you start so the space got powerful, and he goes to sleep. That's a Voyager habit that he has. No question about it. So you begin to observe what are your Voyager habits. We're at the very beginning of this, okay? We're at the very beginning, and what I mean by that is we are just now entering the world where we're going to go ahead and say, yeah, I am a Voyager. Now, what is it like to be a Voyager? Then that's a whole new education. It's a brand new education. And it's developing the skills of resilience. You have to be a good acrobat. And then you have to be present and attentive at the same time. Because then you can bring something to the space and you can be of assistance to your Voyager body and to your fellow Voyagers who are with you and working with you. Mm-hmm. Okay? What else you got, Harry?
Let me see here. Simon says, indeed, Silver, he says, I think it's good to remember that will comes from the will of the essential self and not the usual will of the machine, which is the one that we use habitually.
Right.
Make sure you read your comment, Harry.
Well, actually, that was yours, George. I'll be happy to read it. George had said that basically our work here in this class is learning how to substitute a habit of the essential self in place of one of the historical personality. The Book of Sacrifices that EJ wrote is a series of instructions on how to effect this substitution. I believe that's what George said.
Yeah. No, well done, and thank you for putting that in there.
I try to catch these good ones when they can fly by.
So then the last paragraph is, and noted very well, in the first stage of the labyrinth, that's what we're reading about right now, we wish to awaken, and then listen, alert the Voyager. We alert ourselves, and we alert our Voyager, if at this time the readings have been applied effectively, the secondary labyrinth visions, hallucinations generated by the unwinding of the primate consciousness will not have begun, and the Voyager has a better chance to achieve spontaneous liberation. And we'll hear that phrase quite a bit as we go ahead. Now, I want to put us in context of where we are and some of the strong work a lot of people are doing. And if you haven't had a chance to read and to be read to, I strongly encourage that you do it. And, you know, I don't know if Mark is on, but I think Mark and Ivan.
Do that. Mm-hmm. And you can do it this week.
Yeah. And what about
Mark Circa? Well, there's a comment earlier.
What's that?
There's a comment earlier from Vadir.
Yes, go ahead.
She said, it occurred to me that it may be the only reading done for me at my death and would travel from that moment. So I'm taking that.
That's how serious she's taking.
These exercises may be the only reading that is done, and this is what we get to carry us through.
Mm-hmm. This may be the only opportunity you have, because tomorrow when you're driving home and you fall asleep at the wheel and your car goes off and hits a tree, could happen. I know it's a wild and probability, but it could happen.
Simon,
I want to put us in another context, and you may not have even read this yet, Susan, but I wanted to read something that was submitted this afternoon on the website in the areas called Last Hours of Life, which I encourage you to read and to submit to, which some of you have done, and some of you would like to or longing to do it. And this one came this afternoon. Working with you, Susan, in person, as well as with the impressive sharing of your experiences in writing, has been both a privilege and a wake-up call. It was coincidental that our work on ABD and the progression of your illness arrived at the same time as my own diagnosis of cancer last October, two malignant melanomas in situ. What had been an interesting philosophical study suddenly was transformed into something personal and extremely frightening. No more hiding from my lifelong fear of death, of being suffocated, of being left alone, of being absorbed into nothingness. You are serving all of us in this class, and indeed all beings everywhere, by your courage in acknowledging your fears, which are no doubt shared by many of us, and by being a model to follow when our own sojourns reach their final moment. This sharing in our class is unlike any sharing I've ever experienced, and I remain grateful for your ongoing efforts. And that was written by Harry Piancho.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you, Harry. That's very...
And I thank you, Susan.
There is a great deal of work before us, and the time is very short.
Yes.
And we are blessed in that we have each other for the moment to work with. And I'm going to remember Vadir's words for a long time.
Really?
Vadir, and she says to us, this may be the only reading I'm ever going to have. This may be the last reading I'll ever get. So
Simon had a question.
Go ahead, Simon.
He wondered, is it the same clear light that people with near-death experience most of the times?
Probably. The clear light is, you enter in the clear light of objective reality. I would imagine that that's what's occurring in the near-death experiences. These individuals have clearly left their body. They're in the near-death experience. They have died to the body. And there's some dramatic experiences. That book that you gave me, Harry, by Eben Alexander.
Yes.
Yeah. This
extraordinary
guy was
extraordinary book.
Extraordinary book. I can't remember the title at the moment, but he was a neuroscientist, and he's now become quite a leader in the area of near-death experiences. So, yes, I do believe that is what it is, Simon. And as we understand more what the clear light is, then when we read those experiences, that maybe we can acknowledge that ourselves one way or another.
The name of the book, David.
Pardon?
The title of that book is Proof of Heaven.
Proof of Heaven, Eben Alexander. Well worth the read. So now we turn the page on this American Book of the Dead. And the next chapter starts with something called Second Stage of the Voyage in the Macro Dimensions of the Labyrinth. First Apparitions. It's a big meal ahead of us here. So go ahead and read that. See what happens. So I think that's all I have for this evening. Any other questions, comments?
So you're saying read this out loud to each other.
Pardon?
You're saying read this out loud to each other.
If you would like to do that, and anybody who doesn't have a partner, I'm not sure if Mark Circa would like to participate, but if you would, maybe there's somebody that would like to read for and with Mark as well.
I would be happy to.
Okay, we'll just connect in the chat so you guys can do it together. It's quite an exercise. If you wanted the experience of reading the first apparitions to each other, that's a chore. Okay? But, and it's a little, it's a more difficult read, but, and it'll take a little more presence and attention to do it. But if you want to do that to each other, it is a way of reading it and beginning to absorb it. You're going to absorb it in your Voyager body, not just in your mental centrum.
And this would be part of a regular reading.
It can be part of a regular reading.
Of the 49 days, so.
That's where we're headed, Susan, into no man's land, okay?
I hear you. Yeah, you're screaming.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, Dave.